When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Have you ever had a dream that felt so real? Of course you have. We all dream. But what if your dreams aren't just stories? What if they hold the secret key to your healing, insight, and personal power? I'm Teresa Chung, and in my weekly UK Health Radio show, I'll help you unlock the true meaning and healing power of your dreams, whether your eyes are wide shut or wide open. Each episode explores a common dream theme, features a special guest expert, and then opens the Zoom to you, our dreamers, to ask questions and share your dream stories with us live, because your dreams matter. And in your dreams, you're always the star. So join me each week, and just like a dream, expect only the unexpected. The love inside, Molly, you take it with you. That unforgettable line spoken by Patrick Swayze's immortal character in the movie Ghost is one of those cinematic moments that lingers long after the credits roll, because it touches something deep. The idea that when we reach our final sleep, something beautiful remains. The essence of who we are, the love dream, continues. Here on The Healing Power of Your Dreams, we know that dreams aren't just stories the mind tells us at night. They're doorways, whispers from the soul, sometimes even rehearsals for something greater. So what if death, the greatest mystery of all, is just another dream? A dream where we wake up to more light, to more love, to more of who we truly are. And joining us today to dive into this extraordinary topic are two very special guests indeed. And I've got goosebumps that they're here because their work has reached and touched millions across the globe. Dr. Eben Alexander is a New York Times bestselling Proof of Heaven author and a former academic neurosurgeon who once believed consciousness was solely a product of the brain. That was until he died. After spending days in a coma, Eben returned with an experience so profound it changed everything he thought he knew about the mind, the soul, and the afterlife. Alongside him is Karen Newell, his partner and co-author and the founder of Sacred Acoustics, a powerful sound healing modality helping thousands around the world access expanded states of consciousness. Together, they co-authored Living in a Mindful Universe and have become visionary pioneers in bridging science and spirituality. Now, if you're listening live and have questions for Eben and Karen, we'd love to hear from you. Just email them to me directly at angeltalk710@aol.com. And if you would like to watch our conversation live, Click the Zoom link on the Healing Power of Your Dreams page on UK Health Radio website. That link, Zoom link, will open for you to join and ask questions. So if you go on air, you can do that at about 3:30 p.m. So halfway through the show, the Zoom link opens. And if you're listening to the show live, just make sure when you join that you only have one device playing to avoid an echo. But first, let's get ready for an unexpected journey with Karen and Eben that just might shift the way you think about death, dreaming, and what lies beyond. And I'm going to give the first word to Karen here and then talk to Eben about his near-death experience. Karen, when you first met Eben, please tell me what it was like knowing this man had glimpsed life on the other side or beyond our dreams. And how did that moment align with your personal explorations into the nature of consciousness?
Well, when I first met Eben, we were at a workshop. So we were all kind of just together in a setting where we were all equals. And I knew he had had a near-death experience, but the book Proof of Heaven was not yet published. He didn't even have an agent yet. And when I met him, I had known other people who had had near-death experiences, and I knew he had one of those. And most people who have those kind of experience, they learn really profound personal lessons. So I didn't want to know what he heard. I didn't want to know what he saw. I wanted to know, what did you learn? What was this profound lesson? And he says, the brain doesn't create consciousness. And this confused me. And I said, well, why would anyone think that it does? Because in my own journey, this never occurred to me that consciousness would somehow arise from the brain. To me, consciousness is the soul. And the soul is here before and after our bodies die. This was just a personal belief that I had. And I had also heard that near-death experiencers come back having touched a really powerful love. And I wanted to know about that. What about the love? What is this about the brain? And so this is where the beginning of it all happened, where he was rather intrigued, and it really brought us to an opportunity to talk about all these issues in a really profound way.
That's beautiful. So it was just like synchronicity, that the moment the two of you saw each other, it was love on so many levels.
Well, there was another scene that we went through where at this workshop, we paired up, just happened to be standing next to each other, first day of this workshop. And we had to, one person stood still, the other would walk towards the other person and feel, where did something change that you're supposed to feel their energy field? And I would stop and feel this kind of difference. And inside my heart was doing all these little flippy flops, but I didn't want to say it out loud. I just met this man. But he did. He said, I said, well, what are you feeling? What are you feeling? And he says, well, I feel that the yin and the yang of our hearts are joining as one. And I thought, who
now
is
that's
this
a
man?
Line. That's
the love you were looking for.
That's a line, Evan. I love it. Were you at the time, were you a Sacred Acoustics? Were you working in that area already?
I had already partnered up with Kevin Cossey, the co-founder of Sacred Acoustics. We were making these recordings just for our own personal journeys. And it was after meeting Eben that he suggested, after listening to these recordings, he suggested we make them available to all people. And so that's then he helped me, you know, move along to do all of that with my partner, Kevin.
And then, of course, Proof of Heaven came along, which I believed you were involved with as well. And just changed everything. I mean, near-death experiences just became part of the conversation, didn't they, really? Proof of Heaven was one of the first. There have been other books since about people who've been to the brink of death and seen something amazing. But it was one of the first, wasn't it, to really go up the New York Times bestsellers.
Proof of Heaven hit, the first week it was published, it hit number one on the nonfiction New York Times list. So it was pegged right at the top at the beginning and spent about 2 years on that list. It spent 42 weeks in the number one position. It's been published in over 40 languages. So it really resonated with a big segment of this world. And I know in the feedback I got from many, many readers, a lot of that had to do with the fact that my discussion of this, the words I chose, even though the words pale compared to the reality of the experience, but they were enough to awaken memories in people of their own experiences. Similar things that had been buried in their subconscious. And yet this awoken them, this reality that they'd also been through something similar. And that's what I think is the real driver for this, is there are millions of people out there who have had near-death experiences, shared death, which is similar, but happened in perfectly healthy people. And that's what's changing this world, is that people want to know answers. And the materialist science kept saying, no, it can't be, these can't be real. And yet they're overwhelming. And so now the evidence is quite clear that, yes, afterlife is real. And in scientific circles, reincarnation is treated as a very real possibility because of all the evidence. So the world is waking up to all this. And for me as a scientist, it's all about uniting science and spirituality and our deeper understanding of this world.
I mean, there are many reasons it struck a chord. The timing, the title, I'll talk about that in a minute. It's beautifully written. But was it, do you feel the fact that you were a neurosurgeon, that's what got people really? Do you feel that you were kind of born to write this book, really, in a way, using
Well,
your.
I would say that near-death experiences always happen for the soul who has them. That's it. That's the reason they exist. Now, it's interesting when accumulate hundreds or thousands of these reports, you find all these incredible similarities, but they're always for the one who has them. So for me, as a neuroscientist fascinated with brain mind and nature of consciousness and reality, but also with a history of an adoption abandonment wound. My birth mother had put me up for adoption basically when I was 11 days old, but she wouldn't sign the papers to let me go till I was 4 months old. So that adoption history actually plays into it heavily. And in many ways, my near-death experience was a great resolution and kind of weaving together of all the threads that had been in disarray because of that abandonment wound. But now everything was coming back together in this beautiful sense of oneness and connection with the universe at large. So the NDE for me was absolutely kind of a lifesaver. But it's also of interest to the rest of the world. And it's not just that I was a neurosurgeon. Much more importantly was the disease I had, meningitis, a severe case of gram-negative bacterial meningoencephalitis afflicting all lobes of my brain. That, in the setting of a neurosurgeon who understands enough about consciousness to have the experience. And then, of course, my very survival and complete recovery is something that doesn't have a ready explanation until you admit, oh, yes, he had a near-death experience. That's what allowed for this profound healing. In fact, that's exactly the discussion that the peer review editors of the Journal of Nervous and Mental Diseases had with the three authors who wrote a case report on my medical records. Because they wanted to know, how do you explain this case? It's unprecedented in the medical literature for somebody this ill from meningoencephalitis to fully recover. And they said it's because he had the near-death experience. And that's why they insisted on having that in the title of the paper to help other papers in literature reviews be assembled around NDEs and miraculous healing.
So, first near-death experience on the New York Times bestseller list, and first near-death experience written about in a medical journal, peer-reviewed medical journal. So,
Respect, respect. But I can feel listeners of UK Health Radio, almost I can sense it telepathically. And I'm sorry to ask you, Eben, because you've probably told this story a million times now. But please, can you tell us what happened during those 7 days and what did you see, feel, and know? Can you take us back to your near-death experience again? Just tell, it's like a bedtime story now, isn't it? Please tell us
It
again.
is. I'll keep it very brief,
No,
but
don't.
we have time for questions and all. But the reality is, I went into coma very suddenly, woke up at 4:30 in the morning, back pain, headache, grand mal seizures, and then I was deep in coma for the next week. There's a myth out there in the lay press that it was a medication-induced coma. Not true. It was induced by meningitis, and that makes all the difference in the world. That's why the scientific community takes it so seriously. But the beautiful spiritual parts of the journey, it started in what I call the earthworm eye view, a primitive course unresponsive realm, but I was ushered up through a portal of light into this brilliant ultra-real gateway valley. That's where we would reunite with our souls of departed loved ones. Many earth-like features, but also many spiritual features. It was a world of perfection, like Plato's world of ideals for the individual soul. I had a beautiful spiritual guide who was a complete surprise to me, especially after I woke up trying to make sense of it. And it took more than 4 months after my coma before I received a picture that helped with that. But deep in the beautiful Gateway Valley, this guardian angel, this message he gave me, you're deeply loved and cherished forever. You're richly loved and cherished. You have nothing to fear. That was delivered purely telepathically. And then the angelic choirs in that realm provided yet another light portal to higher and higher levels, all the way out to what I call the core, which I would say was ascending beyond a boundary that many people encounter in an NDE. But for me, the core was encountering pure oneness and acknowledgement of the very sourcing of my conscious awareness as being that God mind, that loving God force that so many have encountered deep in NDEs that assure them that when you die, it's not the end of your awareness, that your relationships with loved ones continue in the spiritual plane, and that there's nothing to fear about death, and it shows us we're eternal souls, basically spiritual beings in a spiritual universe. And that was what I've now spent the last 17 years since my coma refining with work with other neuroscientists, physicians, other experiencers, etc. Because the reality is the scientific world is revealing the truth of these afterlife stories, and you know, but it's all there for anybody to study. BigelowInstitute.org is a site, but the reality is my journey showed me the absolute reality of the afterlife. Studying other NDEs helps to refine that message. And really for all of us, it's a beautiful gift, but it also suggests a responsibility in how we live our lives, because far more important than just NDEs telling us about the nature of the afterlife is how they inform us we should live this life professing unconditional love, kindness, compassion, mercy for all of our fellow beings. That's the deepest lesson of NDEs, that our souls are eternal and that we're really here to help each other.
Oh, wow. NDEs. Karen, I'm going to toss this to you now. NDEs. So people listening, that that's it's new to them. I mean, it's getting more and more mainstream, but could you just sort of explain NDEs, where science is at now in the research and study of NDEs? And also for you, before you met Eben, what was your thinking about this? Because I know Eben was a staunch materialist before this happened to him. Was that the case with you? Did you have?
No, I was never a materialist. Never in my wildest childhood dreams did I think only the physical world was real. So yeah, that's why when he said the brain doesn't create consciousness, I was confused. Like, how could that be a revelation? Everyone should know that. Didn't know it was the fulcrum of materialist science because I hadn't studied materialist science. So, but at any rate, near-death experiences are studied by materialist scientists. It's really psychiatrists, doctors who are talking to people about their experiences that ended up really diving into this research. And it was back in the 1970s, Dr. Bruce Grayson, a psychiatrist who heard interesting stories from his patients. He wrote a book called After, really fascinating, the premier near-death doctor in the world. There he is writing about how he came to his conclusions. He's no longer a materialist scientist, although he still remains kind of skeptical. People who study near-death experiences, they're very skeptical, these scientists. They're not believers, as people might think. They want extraordinary proof, you know, for what they're trying to say. And Bruce is among them. But he developed something that's called the NDE scale. Originally, it was called the Grayson scale, but it has 16 different features that indicate if you've had a near-death experience or not. Things like telepathic communication, feeling like you're out of your body, feeling like you're in another world, encountering the souls of deceased loved ones, anything that's kind of spiritual, not like your normal life. When these things happen, these are indicators of a near-death experience. But the main thing is the transformative effects. What happens afterwards is these people are fundamentally changed. And this is why psychiatrists were so interested, because they were, you know, breaking through, you know, really vexing mental health issues that regular medications and therapy weren't addressing. But after a near-death experience, boom, everything changed. So this is what caught these doctors and scientists' attention and why they decided to study them.
Absolutely. Oh, there's so much more. I want to talk about the very latest research about increased brain activity just at the moment of death. And also, Karen and Eben, to ask about the dreaming state and how close that is to a kind of a mini death every single night. But I believe we've got to go to a commercial break right now. So stay with us. You don't want to miss this compelling, visionary interview.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, and welcome back to this Is Death But a Dream episode with Dr. Eben Alexander and Karen Newell. So many questions coming in, but I'm just going to talk to them a bit more to set the scene for you all. Eben, the latest research, I think it was last year it came out, which showed that at the moment of death, it's like the brain is like lights up like a Christmas tree. What are your thoughts about that based on your personal experience? What's happening?
Well, I would say that that particular report in many ways was a red herring. What happened was they had people who were dying, and in the death process, they could measure this EEG activity. Right at the, you know, kind of last breath, and it was a kind of a gamma burst, and they thought, oh, maybe this explains NDEs. But unfortunately, the people who did that research were very unaware of the scientific study of NDEs. For example, Pim van Lommel wrote a beautiful book, a scientific paper in the journal Lancet in the year 2001, where he reviewed more than 350 successive cardiac arrest patients in a series of Dutch hospitals, and found that 20%, that's one in five of those people, had near-death experiences. They came back and had the phenomenal experience. But interestingly, in the cases, in those particular cases where they did have EEG, they knew the EEG went flat within 20 seconds and stayed flat. So to have this one scientific paper saying, well, we found these gamma bursts in these two patients when they died. Of course, the patients never reported, those two patients never reported any phenomenal experience. So we have no idea if there's a phenomenal thing to attach to that electrical gamma burst. But we know that there are many, many other cases of people who have had profound near-death experiences who had no such EEG activity at all. So I would say that's a kind of materialist wishful thinking trying to divert attention from the actual facts of near-death experiences and pretend that it's some kind of brain activity that explains it. Especially when you look at the bigger kind of series of NDEs and shared death experiences, which happen in perfectly healthy people and have a lot of the same ingredients as near-death experiences, even to the point where a bystander soul can witness the life review of a departing soul. You start to realize we've got a lot more to answer here than just some presumed brain connection through a spurious gamma burst found in those two patients.
And I just wanted to add, a lot of people will ask us, how do we know what near-death experiencers tell us is really what happens when we die? And so that's why the work of Dr. Christopher Kerr, he works at Hospice Buffalo. He wrote a book called Death is But a Dream, very similar to your title. I love it. And because he found that when people are in the actual process of dying, that what he did was he interviewed these patients. He got permission from the Yale Institutional Review Board, all very academic and official. And he asked them, what's going on? And what they reported was visions and dreams, they called them. When they were asleep, they called it a dream. If they were awake, they called it a vision. But really, it was this kind of sleep-awake state, something that we're very familiar with that we call the hypnagogic state, the state between awake and asleep. And so these people were having what I guess the language we would use is very vivid dreams, but they were actually reporting them to be lived experiences. They used words like more real than real, 360 vision, all the kind of things that near-death experiencers were tell us. Now, Dr. Kerr was not trying to find out the answer to this question, what happens when we die. He wanted to know, how can we comfort hospice patients in their last, you know, weeks, months, hours of life? And what he found was in these interviews that they're having the life review. They start having the life review that's reported in near-death experiences, where your life flashes before your eyes. People are revisiting childhood events. What they're looking for is the most loving, comforting events that they can find. Now, some people might have uncomfortable experiences, but these are teaching events where you go back and you realize, oh my gosh, I guess I shouldn't have done that. One of his examples was a dirty cop who had beat up suspects, planted false evidence, all the things we hear about, and he was feeling horrible guilt. But in that life review, he had to go face that guilt. He had to feel the pain that he had caused other people. And so this is really remarkable that this can happen in a near-death experience and also in an actual death experience. I think when someone has a near-death experience, they're thrown into it very quickly, and everything kind of happens at once. But in a natural death experience, it unfolds very gradually. And so many pieces of evidence that Dr. Kerr has found completely concur with the shared death, the near death. They're all saying the same things. They don't talk to each other very often. They like to stay in their little silos of specialty, and that's so they're not influenced by other people. But at some point, they're mostly male doctors who I'm speaking of, they need to start talking to each other and realize they're discovering the same things in completely different settings. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and thank you for mentioning Dr. Christopher Kerr. There's a phenomenal a TED Talk, I believe he did, about his work, which is really, really interesting to go and listen to. I'm going to draw it back to dreams here. Eben and Karen, the dream state. You mentioned, Karen, there that in the life review, it's about teaching and learning empathy, isn't it? If you have done things that are not so good, you need to feel what pain you caused, I guess, not for judgment, but to teach. And in my dream work, I often encourage people to view their dreams, their nightmares in that way, kind of like a teaching tool for the soul in this human experience. Would you say that dreams are kind of like a preview of the other side of afterlife, where we go every night?
Well, I'll just start and you can add on. One theory that I hear about is that when people sleep at night, their energy body leaves their body, goes off and has these spiritual adventures. And this is also what happens when we die. Our energy body leaves our body. And in that case, when we die, we have a permanent end to our connection with the body. But in a dream, we can come back. And so this is something we're not aware of because we fall asleep and don't notice. But many people have found that space through lucid dreaming, through generating out-of-body experience. You can become more aware of these things happening. But it's my understanding it happens every night, whether we realize it or not.
And I would simply add, I think that spiritual space is something that we access through dreaming. And the very fact that people who are in the process of dying can have very vivid dreams where their loved ones present to them in a very real fashion. I mean, that happened to my own mother, my adoptive mother, when she passed at age 99 in April of 2019. She had a fever. At that age, a fever can knock you out. And she was unconscious, unresponsive for the last 4 or 5 days of her life. But about two nights before she passed, she woke up, got out of bed, told her nurse, "Call my children. My mother's here. She's really here." And it was 2:30 in the morning, so the nurse didn't call us. And by the next morning, Mom was back in her unresponsive state and then passed from this world the following day. But the reality is, when I heard that, I knew she was very close to passing. And it's not wishful thinking. It's absolutely real. I can tell you from my own experience that these connections are very, very real. And sometimes you get information that only the active agent, that soul could really give you. So really kind of extraordinary that we get to experience this. But I think there's tremendous overlap between that dream space and the spiritual space of NDEs.
Thank you for that. And we're just about to go to your song choice. I'd love you to, whoever wants to explain why you've chosen this. And I'm wondering if you could also touch on this as well, because you do describe the afterlife as a place of compassion, love, education. I don't want people listening to think, oh great. I mean, we're here on this earth for a reason, and this life is precious as well. And I think your song choice actually perfectly encapsulates that as well. So I'll just let you introduce it.
Well, when you asked us to pick a song, we thought, well, love. Love is the most important thing. And how can we bring love to our song? And then we looked up all these love songs, and most of them are about relationships with one other person, you know? And we thought, no, this is the love for everyone. And that's why we thought of what the world needs now is love.
And it's all about interconnection of souls. I mean, to a near-death experiencer, there's no greater, deeper, more profound message from the experience than we're here out of love and to love each other. And bringing love to this world is the most important thing we can do as near-death experiencers who have come to realize our spiritual nature in the spiritual universe. And so this particular song really hits it right on the head, because it talks about the world needing love, and that's what we agree with. The world needs love, and love can be incredibly healing and transformational to us individually and to the world at large.
And we don't need to die to get it, Teresa. We can bring it right here, right now, anytime by focusing on our hearts and generating gratitude, all of the things we're grateful for.
Of course, it's what we focus on in our meditation too. I meditate an hour or two a day using sacred acoustics, been doing that for the last 12, 13 years. And love is right there at the focus of my meditative efforts to bring love to this world.
Take it away. Hello, welcome back. And we're at that wildly unpredictable part of the show where the Zoom lines open or emails come in. So, Karen and Evan, I hope you're ready. And we have a beautiful lady because she's kindly put her camera on. Hello, Alison. Please introduce yourself, who you are, what you do, and your questions for Karen and Evan. Take it away.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Karen. Hello, Evan. Thank you for inviting me to ask this question. My name is Alison Gray. I'm called the Mindful Medium. So a lot of my work that I do is as a medium, as a healer, also as a past life regressionist. So my question, I was going to change my question two or three times because I've got listening to you. It's so engaging. I've got so many questions to ask. But what I was going to ask is that through my work, through my own personal experience, and through my own work, I've got like three different kind of ways in which people have entered into either, the spirit world. As a meditation, I have done what you have done, where I've been kind of like in what a place called like an Eden. For me, it was like the core of the earth, and I was kind of like shown that I was rising up into the big expanse of the universe. So that sense and that connection of like knowing everything but not really knowing anything, and I was kind of hovering out of my body in the universe, being massive, feeling that love, feeling the connection all around. And then of course I came back. But with my past life regressionists, it's always interesting that as I take my clients to the last moments in that particular life, as they pass over and see the white light, they go to the soul review, they go through the white light, through the soul review, but they are always on their own. They always say that there's no one with them. And yet when I'm working as a medium, and I've had stories of people that have are passing over, or messages from people's loved ones, they say that they are always there to hold somebody's hand as they transition through. So I have like three different experiences, and as a medium, I'd really like to kind of like ask you both, what do you think is the most common experience that somebody will go through as they pass over?
Well, I think that in general, the experiences do involve guidance. So, in other words, you feel the sense of being home, that the right things will unfold for you. So, even if you're not aware of another presence, that there seems to be kind of guidance and assistance. And a lot of it seems to come from memory, like, oh, I remember. Oh, yes, this. And so it's not that people necessarily need what I would call a person as a guide, but often there's a force, there's a knowledge, there's a knowing that helps them kind of navigate the whole thing. So you don't have to do it on your own, de novo.
Okay, that's really interesting, because a lot of people, that's what they're scared of. And it was interesting, Karen, what you were saying about how as you're passing, you get those memories and you see you know, your loved ones coming in. It's kind of like that's a transitional stage, and some people I feel need that so that they're not scared as they pass over into the
I think
spirit.
the best resource for what happens during actual death is Dr. Kerr's work, Death is But a Dream, because these people, all of them are seeing their loved ones. I mean, that's the most common thing that happens in near-death experiences around the world in different cultures. You see your loved ones, the people who've already died before you. You feel like you're going to another world and you're moving from darkness to light. So somehow those elements are present in all near-death experience around the world and in Dr. Kerr's actual death experience literature. So that, I think the actual death might help people more than the near-death because it's a little more accessible. And they may have had grandmothers who passed away talking about seeing their husband, you know, their, you know, the grandfather and such. And most people think, oh, hallucinations, wishful thinking. But what Dr. Kerr found out is no, it's real. Right.
And that's my understanding of working and doing many readings, that their loved ones do come. But I just wanted to ask what your opinion was because of the past life regression and also, you know, your experience of the expansion, you know, going out into that place where, you know, you just didn't see anything at that point. You were just one, just kind of like being. So.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out the scientists who study this, a huge part of the big issue here are this large library of past life memories in children suggestive of reincarnation. It's a huge part of the bigger understanding. And what it also tells us is we may not remember this from our little ego mind and ego perspective. You know, we just remember events of this life. But ultimately, our kind of higher soul has been through this before. And that's why it does seem familiar and not frightening. That's what I would reassure people about tremendously, is our souls have done this before and they're good at it. And especially that reconnecting with souls of departed loved ones, that kind of shocks you into the reality of, oh, yes, we're eternal souls working together again. So, but nothing to fear about that dying process.
And just in case you're wondering, you will not encounter souls of departed loved ones that you did not have a loving relationship with. Some people are concerned, oh my gosh, is my abusive uncle going to show up?
Right.
No, he's not going to show up. Dr. Kerr says it's all about the loving bonds. It's like the love starts to, you know, permeate. And so, and before you actually pass, you're surrounded by this love energy. And you kind of, some people grow into it very gradually.
And the other point I'd make about that is that love energy is really the coin of the realm. And so, in other words, when some people, when they hear about reincarnation, they worry, oh, wait a minute, what if my loved one reincarnates before I get there? And what I will tell you is from my experience, everything I know about NDEs and all related experiences, the love connection is so important that that could never happen, that a loved one would not be available to us when we pass from this world. And when you recognize the ability in life reviews for the universe in whatever fashion to really, you know, they're a reliving of events. They're more real than lived events in this world. And also in life reviews, they're 84% describe them as from the perspective of everybody involved. So they show that we're kind of sharing the dream of the one mind. If you hurt another, it's hurting yourself. That's what life reviews teach us very deeply.
Oh, and also on the other side, there is no concept of time. And I'm at the moment like this. I'm just so lost in this conversation between you two. Alison, thank you so, so much. I wish we could talk forever, but I am getting a signal that it's time for the commercial break, the material world coming in again. But that's how this show carries on. So thank you. More questions on the other side, everyone. Please stay there. And thank you from my heart, Alison.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK House Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. Visionary dreamers, too many questions, not enough time. So I'm going to do some rapid fire ones for you too, if that's okay. There's also questions I want to ask, but that's a bit selfish of me. But anyway, from James in from Norwich, if death is a kind of dream, as you've been saying in this interview, do we all dream the same thing, or is each afterlife experience shaped by our beliefs?
I would say every afterlife experience is shaped not only by our beliefs, but by kind of our soul journey. Beliefs are very important, and don't shortchange yourself by being too limiting in your beliefs. But ultimately, they're teaching us something. And that coming back to this world, after a near-death experience is quite a feat in itself because it's showing that you might have died, but you didn't. So maybe there's a reason you came back. Maybe you've got more purpose to fulfill in this life. But I would say ultimately they're all hinged around our soul journeys and can be quite different from each other. But ultimately the deepest lessons are around love, compassion, and kindness.
Thank you. Have you got anything to add there, Karen? Or no? Okay, I'm going to. There's a question coming for you, actually. A fan of your sound frequency work, which we haven't had time to cover properly and give it the time it deserves. But Karen, this is from Annika from Glasgow. Are there particular sound frequencies or tones that help us connect with loved ones who've passed, perhaps in a lucid dream?
Well, just to give people a brief background, sacred acoustics creates audio recordings that contain binaural beats, and the binaural beats are associated with different brainwave states, sleep, meditation, creativity, and we kind of target that space between awake and asleep that we've been talking about. And so it's kind of like going, when you listen, it's kind of like going into a lucid dream from an awake state, as opposed to waking up within a dream, realizing that you're dreaming. But as far as specific frequencies for connecting with loved ones, it's really just getting into that state and then using your intention. And so you can probably use any number of our recordings. There's one called Secret Garden that was developed specifically for this purpose, but it's not necessarily because it's the only frequencies that will work. So the idea is you set your intention by generating the feeling that you have for the person that you would like to connect with. So you imagine what they look like, you imagine their name and those facts, but also what did it feel like? What was that loving bond that you shared with that person that makes you want to connect? And then when you fall asleep at night, chances are when the time is right, they'll pop up in your dream, and those dreams will be a little bit different than a regular dream. It'll stand out in some way, and you'll know when that happens. But it can also happen during meditation. It can happen unbidden during a crisis event. A loved one can just appear. So there's many ways to make that contact.
Thank you. Thank you. And this is a question from Callum from Brighton, which actually I wanted to ask, Eben. Has your understanding of death changed the way you dream?
Well, I'm not, it probably has in a sense, although I think a far bigger factor for me has been my use of meditation. And as I said earlier, I use sacred acoustics, binaural beats, an hour to a day, more if I have the time. And I've been doing that for the last 12 or 13 years. I think that's had more of a power on my dream space, although the dream space certainly seemed to be enlivened, after my NDE. But I think I was revisiting that spiritual realm to make a lot of progress, and that's why I was having such vivid dreams early on. But interestingly enough, especially as my meditative practice has increased, I think my dream space during my natural sleep is a little less than it used to be. But that's because I'm getting so much more of the work done in this kind of lucid dreaming state of being deep under the influence of sacred acoustics, binaural beat, brainwave entrainment. So the meditation has really kind of helped me to focus my efforts and put it more into meditation than in my natural, nocturnal dream space.
Great. I'm just going to do these rapid fire questions. I want to get as many in as I can. Harry from, I think that's Sidcup. It's about living in a mindful universe. That book speaks to the idea that we are all connected through invisible energies. How can we use this knowledge in our everyday life to feel less alone and more alive?
Well, one thing that you can do is generate feelings of gratitude in your heart And imagine that those feelings are broadcasting to the world around you. And at the same time, you can open to receive the love from others who are broadcasting it. The heart naturally expands and contracts based on your emotional state. So becoming more aware of this can really help how you go through your life. And you can bring that knowledge into your daily interaction just by knowing that your heart is affecting the people around you in this way. So these are the invisible energies, right? It's an electromagnetic field. You can't see it, but you can feel it. So just becoming more aware of that can make you feel more spiritually connected to yourself.
Were you a fan of Taylor Swift's Invisible Strings, the song?
I don't listen to Taylor Swift. No, this all comes from heart math, but maybe she's also a fan of heart math. That's
It
awesome.
was
Very
very
good.
Now, I've got a question in from Sarah. It doesn't say what location. You often reference quantum physics. How do the findings of modern physics support the idea of consciousness surviving bodily death? Whoever wants to take that one.
Well, I would simply put in there entanglement, entanglement in between subatomic particles created in the same process is a very mysterious demonstration of information passage in our universe that is not limited by four-dimensional space-time like our Newtonian deterministic physics. So entanglement really opens the door to a much broader connection. In fact, I was going to say in response to what Karen mentioned minutes ago, she mentioned an electromagnetic field, and yet I think it's quite clear that it's really an entanglement field that has much more to do with mental connections, telepathy, remote viewing, ability to gain information at a distance. And entanglement is really finally a refutation to Einstein's complaint about quantum physics that it was incomplete. And he was trying to maintain something called local realism. Local meaning all physics must involve particles touching other particles, like light coming from a star to touch my eye, etc. But I think that what we realize now is that this much bigger theater of operations is really the mental field, the entanglement field. They're the same thing, but they have to do with our connection with loved ones, both alive and past from the physical plane. And in fact, when you look at life reviews, as I said earlier, we're going to have to totally revise what we think the nature of reality is to fully accept this this whole business of being able to relive your entire life from the perspective of all involved in a more real than real form in these life reviews. I mean, there's something quite amazing going on there, teaching us about the importance of actual events and experiences. And this is the material of our growth as souls. So it's not this kind of bottom-up causation with these subatomic particles following their laws, but more of a top-down causality that has everything to do with this mental field, mind over matter, and the fact that the physical universe ultimately is emerging from that realm of the mental.
And just to be clear, the mental includes the love, the heart, all of that.
And the
Evan
spirit,
doesn't always say
the
that, but
spiritual, yes.
that's what you're there for, Karen. So.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm just going to do an overview question now because we are running out of time. I kind of liked to encapsulate what's coming in, getting a sense from the questions. For the listeners who have asked questions about they've lost someone, or a few of them coming in about fearing death, this is hard. These are such huge topics, but what message do you want people who have lost someone grieving, or a lot of people fear death? What do you want them to hear from your work, Karen and Eben, and from the other side? What do you want them to know right now
That this
intuitively?
is really about living your authentic life, and your authentic life includes the knowledge that death of the body is not the end of your soul's existence, and your soul's relationship with other beloved souls is something that does not end with bodily death. So it's a very reassuring, scientifically validated way of looking at the world, as I mentioned a while ago, but not to miss it, BigelowInstitute.org, 29 essays from scientists proving the reality of the afterlife. If you start reading those, you'll quickly see the scientific world has made up its mind on this. Even though you might have some complaining, atheist materialists out there who are unfamiliar with this information. But if they read BigelowInstitute.org essays, they'll start to quickly realize. Karen?
And I would just add, this idea that people are afraid of death, what, where does that fear come from? And for us, we've realized it comes from the materialist worldview that believes only the physical world is real. This is embedded into our academics, our scientists. It's really embedded into social policies, if you really look at it, because this is kind of a belief. And if you read that nothing happens after you die unless you believe in an afterlife, like a heaven from your religion or something, then you'll have something that happens in the afterlife. But what's happening is that worldview has been completely destroyed. There is no anyone left, really. Eben could say this more powerfully than me, that can really think that only the material world is real. The evidence is just overwhelming. And so this hasn't really filtered down to lay people. It's just been embedded in us from day one in the secular world. And so changing this idea that we are more than our physical bodies is really key, because the idea that we will stop existing, that's really an existential threat. There's no wonder that we're afraid we're going to stop existing. But what all of the research is telling us is that we don't stop existing. There's a whole group of scientists, and they're not known by people. I call it a secret club, but I'm really not supposed to talk about it, even though I'm talking about it on the air here. But they call themselves scientists who study survival. And survival means we survive. Even our personality continues to exist after we die in some other form, and it remains available to other people. And so by studying this research, you know, with our intellect, we can find a different belief on, you know, what the world is really all about. And the truth is, we're spiritual beings primarily. We come temporarily into this physical world to learn, to grow. It's incredibly important to be here on Earth, because this is where the real growth happens. It's our challenges that help us to grow. And so those of us who think, why do we have to have all of this suffering in the world? It's to help us grow. And when we go to leave this lifetime, that's when we get to do, I loved how the previous questioner didn't call it a life review. She called it a soul review. That's when you have a chance to kind of course correct, see what you did right or wrong, and then move on to the next opportunity in another lifetime. And so this is just a class in the school of life. It's not the entire course, this lifetime that you're leading. That's just one metaphor to look at it. I don't know that us saying this is going to change anyone's mind, because it's a feeling that you have. And so one way that some people have gotten over their fear of death is to develop a meditation practice. They get to know their awareness. They get to know that their awareness has all of these things happening separate from the body. And then they're more familiar with when that time will actually arrive. And so, anything else?
So eloquently put. Thank you so much. Are there any closing thoughts either you want to have at this moment? And also the best way to get in touch with you both?
I would just say the world's in a lot of trouble these days. The polarization in political circles, military action, warfare, refugees. It's really time we had a major reset. I would say that a tremendous amount of that trauma to the modern world is caused by the false sense of separation that's inherent in materialism. This emerging model that we're talking about, where the brain is a filter for primordial unified consciousness, is much more kind of optimistic and kind of refreshing, a view of who we are and how this world can work together and how love, compassion, and kindness can come to rule the day.
And I would just add, if you know someone who is dying, someone who has a terminal diagnosis, someone who's, you know, knows that that's ahead, go spend time with them. Go see what it's like. Ask them questions. Ask them what they're feeling. And if you discuss this with other people who are in those throes, many of us do not. We stay away from those conversations. If you have those conversations, you'll start to learn firsthand for yourself what it's like. And it can be a very beautiful experience to be with someone when they're actually dying.
You're walking them home to their soul.
Beautiful.
Absolutely.
And the best way to contact you both? Before you leave, what's the
best?
Well,
through Eben, EBENAlexander.com, and I recommend the FAQ page, the recommended reading. There are many interviews, et cetera, there. And of course,
sacredacoustics.com. You can get a free download, learn a lot more about all of these recordings. You can reach out to me directly through the contact form on sacredacoustics.com.
Thank you. We've been so blessed today to hear from two visionary voices helping humanity remember who we really are. Infinite, conscious, deeply connected beings just having a temporary physical dream. And we're going to close this episode by a British band, actually, that works a lot in Japan and has great success there, called The Sleeves. And they actually emailed me after I first interviewed Eben and Karen many years ago. They were so touched by what they heard that they actually wrote a song for you. And the song is about love, but it's about a near-death experience and that feeling of when you come back from a near-death experience, what you described, Eben, feeling so alive.